From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Kojo Namdi Show. It's the Computer Guys and Gal. Our Computer Guys and Gal used to be John Gilroy, computer guy and director of business development at solutionsdevelopers.com, but since he decided that his new job is handing out notebooks...
Yes, that's right. To people wandering off the street at the last minute. I can name names here. I'm not that way.
That would be Bill Harlow. He's a computer guy and former Mac genius and now a Macintosh consultant with Mid-Atlantic Consulting. And Allison Druin, WMU's computer gal and director of the Human-Computer Interaction Lab at the University of Maryland College Park. John, good to see you.
Good to see Allison here on time. And Kojo's on time, too. That's interesting.
Allison is on time and in town.
In town, yes.
How you doing, Bill?
I'm good.
Bill is our last arrival today, but he was not late. You, too, can arrive on this broadcast by calling 800-433-8850 or by sending your email to kojo@wamu.org. We have a lot of questions today, so I am going to start with an email for you, Allison. This one is from Maureen, who said, I've had a digital camera for about a year now and am totally unorganized. The photos on my computer are everywhere in Adobe Photoshop, Album Starter, and Adobe Photoshop Elements, and HP PhotoSmart, Media Essential, and Premiere, and Kodak EasyShare. And some are simply stored in Microsoft Office under my documents in the folder labeled Pictures. I do want to store them on the computer and not on a separate website, and frankly, I don't care which program I use. I just need to pick one and stay with it and get rid of the rest. I'm hoping that Allison has some thoughts.
I actually do have thoughts. It's very
It's like hoping that water has H2O.
I have great thoughts. Actually, I would say that there's no other program but Picasa, okay? And it's just, it's a very simple program. It's actually, it's owned by Google now, so it's well supported. There's a local version. I hope, she's got a PC, right? Did she say that?
Yes, she did.
Okay. So, yeah, because it's a local PC application. There is an online web album feature if she wanted. It's for free. However, that's only for 1 gig of storage. After that, you got to pay. But there's very nice organization. Essentially, it scans all the images on your computer and automatically sorts them by date. And then you're done. It's great.
That's it?
That's it.
That's too easy.
Thank you very much.
Let's move on to John Gilroy. Here's an email we got from Leonardo. Every week I listen to Tech Tuesday, and it seems that every week there's at least one moment where backing up data is stressed as the wisest and one of the most important things to do. A few weeks ago, I bought a new laptop and was in the midst of transferring some important data that was recently created, so I had not yet backed it up. As I was putting it into my external, the drive freaked out, and when I tried to copy the data onto my new machine, the drive was recognized, but a dialog box said it needed to be formatted. Now I get that message on my machine, on any machine that I plug that drive into. Can data be recovered from this drive? And if so, what's the best method and or software to do it? I wouldn't mind buying recovery software since I would like to be prepared for something like this at any point in the future.
Wow. Now, I think this is a pretty popular question. While I was waiting in the lobby for Bill to show up, on his way
on time, I might add,
we had one of the employees from this radio station have a hard drive crash and had a similar type of question. Well, I would suggest, as I've said hundreds of times, if you don't back up, you crack up. We know that. But I guess I look at backing up as just maybe more than just one location or putting all your eggs in one basket. You know, if I were a PhD candidate at Allison School, I would probably have my dissertation in a bank vault somewhere and two external hard drives and a CD with my cousin in Milwaukee. I mean, I'd be so freaked out about that PhD thesis and I'd keep it in more than one spot. I was trying to understand Leonardo's message. It looks like he had one computer and then he backed up to an external hard drive, then bought a new computer and he was attempting to transfer the information from the external hard drive to the new computer. I think that's what it seemed like to me. Now, the question would be is, it's still got to reside somewhere. I think it still resides in a computer somewhere. So I think what he wants to do is just try to reformat the new external hard drive and see how that works. So that would be one approach. But I think what you want to do is look at other utilities. You know, OnTrack, you can call them up, and they'll charge you $2,000 to fix your hard drive. They even have a utility you can try. So you can go to OnTrack.com and get a free utility to test that. And as I told the person in the hallway, you may want to do the last-ditch effort of putting it in your freezer and the next morning plugging it in. And some people like Bill have success with that technique,
believe
don't
it, I've
you?
Tried that, and it works in a pinch. But one thing I will say is you definitely want to make sure you put it in like a nice sealed bag to get condensation on it and ruin the drive further.
Well, on behalf of Leonardo and our hallway monitor,
who remain nameless,
I thank you. Now, Bill Harlow, the big news, I guess it was last week or the week before, was that ex-Google employees have started a new search engine that's going to make Google like history. It's called Cool. It's spelled C-U-I-L. It's my understanding that you went to this website, and you can say something self-serving here.
I did. I noticed that unlike on Google, if you do a search for Kojo Namdi using the Cool search engine, C-U-I-L, it actually pulled up Tech Tuesdays with Kojo Namdi. I didn't see Computer Guys in there, so it wasn't perfect.
I finally read what was on Wikipedia, and it actually said there are frequent new Tech Tuesday Computer Guys that show up from Mid-Atlantic Consulting and University of Maryland. So this format actually made me read some of this stuff that I probably haven't read before, which
That's
is
true.
Sort of interesting.
Now they're saying that they index, 120 billion pages, which they claim is the biggest index. Now, Google doesn't give out their figures, so we honestly have no idea.
Right.
That said, there's a lot of stuff on the internet, so having 120 billion versus how many, is it more hits or more good hits?
I think it's kind of mixed. When I tested it this morning,
yeah.
I typed in my name, of course, and I got an artist from Ireland with a picture from a guy from Bearing Point. What is Cool up to? But as far as Kojo Namdi, it works fine for that. But
I think
it's worth
a shot
in many areas.
I kind of like the way it looks, too.
It does look nice. You got
really
a three-column layout.
Cool.
It
does
look cool.
Okay, let's go to Ruth in Washington, D.C. Ruth, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you so much. And please forgive my complete lack of technical names for anything.
That's
so
fine.
So bear with me. I have a house on Martha's Vineyard, which I'm very fortunate about, family thing. It's great. Where we have absolutely, it's in a very rural part of the island, where we have absolutely no phone service. But a hardline phone service and no way to get DSL and satellite set up there. So I have, from AT&T, a little device that I plug into my USB port. I think of it as a modem. And I pay a monthly service to AT&T and have pretty slow access to the Internet, but that's how I'm managing. What I wanted to know is whether that little external device could be used on a Mac, which I've just bought, or do I have to swap it out for another device?
So,
and is there any other solution to my problem?
So
this is the bigger issue.
You have a PC right now, I take it.
I have a Dell. I have a PC.
Gotcha.
Right now.
I guess it depends on the card. There are a lot of these USB cellular modems that do work fine on the Mac. So perhaps the one using now would work, and you can just plug it in and off you go. But if not,
I'm sorry, go ahead. I was going to say, could I screw up anything if I just plug it into my Mac and see if it works?
Well, if you do that, I don't think you'd necessarily screw anything up, but you might not have success. It's probably worth talking to AT&T first and finding out if there's any additional software you need to download for your Mac first. Make sure you have that. But then other than that, you should be good to go. I don't think there's any harm in giving it a shot. The other thing, too, is there are some routers out there. I'm not sure this would be more than what you need, but there's some that will let you plug in a cellular modem and then share that over Wi-Fi. So it's like having a typical broadband Wi-Fi connection in your house.
Oh, really? So
yes.
There's like a little wireless router that I could use this device for or with?
Yes.
And what is that called? And that would be great because there are multiple users in my house right now, and we just swapped this little device around.
Yeah, we talked about it several shows ago. I don't remember the specific brands anymore, but I guess what you're looking for is just a what do they call those anyway? That's a good question.
Wireless router is not a bad...
Wireless router with EVDO or something along those lines?
Yeah. EVDO is a type of technology that goes straight up. And they've altered that. Start off with PCMCA cards. Now it's USB devices. And now must be independent attached units as well. I haven't seen one, but it makes perfect sense to have them.
Ruth, we're looking it up even as we speak. So if we get that information from our previous broadcast later, you keep listening. See, this is how we hold him for the entire hour.
Yeah. And don't leave. Don't leave. We'll tell you at 1 o'clock.
And we'll pass that information on to you later.
All right.
Ruth, thank you. Go ahead, Ruth. I'm sorry. What did you say, Ruth? I missed that. Ah, I think Ruth just left us.
She's going to send us some lobsters.
Here's Matthew in Arlington. Matthew, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, how are you? I have a MacBook Pro 15-inch, and it's, you know, new within the last 2 years. And when I bought it, I had them put 2 gigabytes of RAM in it. And I find that I need more memory, but I understand that the max that it can take is 3 gigabytes of RAM.
That is correct.
But I only have 2 slots, and I understand that you're not supposed to unbalance them, so really I should have 4, but what does that do for me if I can't access that 1 gigabyte? Your thoughts, please.
Well, you have a MacBook Pro, so in your case, you actually could use a 2 and a 1, and that would be fine. And in fact, even if you didn't have the Pro version, you could technically do it, but it may make graphic performance on a MacBook slower because it uses the memory shared with video memory. So in your case, you could do a 2 plus 1, or if you did 2 and 2, that would work, but it just wouldn't address that last 1 gigabyte.
Oh, okay, so I can do the 2 plus 1.
All right,
well, very good. And the lady who was answering the phone wants to know why her, whenever she tries to connect people, sometimes it dies when she picks up the phone. So that might be something for after the show. I said I'd mention it.
Well, she can call in if she wants to have
a just to wait in line, though.
Walk over, I don't know.
To take a number.
Thank you very much for your call, Matthew. And
bye-bye.
John Gilroy, you wanted to point out that not everybody is in love with the iPhone.
Well, I don't want to be an iconoclast here or an iPhonoclast or whatever
or
you want to call it.
Or to alienate everyone else at the table.
Or get, you know, iPhones thrown at me here. You know, I mean, there's a big deal. They sold 1 million phones. Well, Nokia sells 1 million phones a day. So that's a big deal. And there's
and McDonald's sells a lot of hamburgers, too. What's your point?
Yeah, really.
The point is, what's the big deal? I mean, a lot of people are saying, well, this is, you know, fine, but there's some limitations to using the iPhone.
Sure.
And I may be the last person on the planet to get an iPhone, but I just want to, you know, point out some of the weaknesses in the iPhone.
Well, Gilroy said it's amazing what this phone is not capable of doing. And I suspect that our other two guests want to tell you a few things that the phone is capable of doing.
Oh, come on. There's nothing you can do
with
that
phone.
They
both want to share some of their favorite iPhone applications.
I don't believe a word they say.
First, you, Allison.
You are so last century. It kills me, John. Okay.
Thank you.
Anytime. Anyway, no. All right. So look, this is like the biggest story of the future here. Okay? This is the biggest thing because basically...
The future's a long time. Are you sure about that?
All right. The biggest story for today. All right?
Okay.
For today. Okay? Let's face it. When was the last time people got excited about apps, okay, about downloading apps onto anything? Come on, Gilroy, let's read 1997, you know, come on, really. So, you know, I'm in the middle of the woods, all right, in the Berkshires, and my husband's downloading apps because this is what, you know, it was so exciting. So anyway, thanks to his downloading apps and my taste.
And his compulsive behavior.
Yeah, well, he's so good at that. He's so good.
At compulsive behavior?
No. All right, so for those people that might be living under a rock with John Gilroy, okay, that don't know what we're talking about here is that. Essentially, somewhere around July, was it 9th or so? July 11th?
Sure. That
something
right.
like that. Okay. Basically the iPhone App Store opened. All right. And there are essentially free applications that you can get on to your iPhone. And it ranges from free to, you know, $10, $12, whatever. We're talking the first weekend, all right, 10 million downloads, all right? We're talking numbers, 25 million downloads in 10 days. Essentially, we've got somebody who's making an application, a crossword puzzle application that's getting 99 cents a pop for a download, making $300 a day, folks, okay? This is serious gold rush.
In the midst of all of this commercialism, her favorite is... an application known as Bubbles.
Oh, this is the coolest thing. All right, I got to tell you. All right, so you're waiting online. Your 2-year-old is jumping through the roof, and you're embarrassed beyond belief. What can you do? You can take your iPhone out, hand them this application.
A 2-year-old holding my iPhone. That's not going to happen.
My wife would be surprised if we had a 2-year-old.
So, Ed, basically, you can... I don't want to go there with you, John. Anyway, you can press the screen and bubbles appear and bubbles pop. It is the most silly, awesome thing
in
the world.
What's your favorite application, Bill?
And Allison, you have a normal IQ, right? Okay.
I have a PhD, John.
What's your favorite, Bill?
Well, other than Bubbles.
I know. Yeah, I took it from him. Sorry, guys.
There are a lot. You're making me choose one, which is hard. But I think my favorite is probably Pandora. Pandora.com is a really cool website, and it's free to sign up. They have this thing called the Music Genome Project, where they analyze music and they try to categorize all the things that make each song unique. And they have this huge database. So what you do is you sign in and you tell it, I like this song or I like this artist, and it generates a live stream of all this music that it thinks you may like, including some of the stuff from the artist you mentioned. And you rate things thumbs up, thumbs down, and the more you do that, the more accurate it gets. And you can find a lot of really good music this way. So Pandora for iPhone is just a really simple interface for this, where you can stream this music over Wi-Fi or over 3G or even over Edge. And it's just a nice way to find new music, and the interface is really simple, and it's just very clean and very awesome.
Yeah, but Midomi is better.
Well, Midomi lets you
identify
music.
We're going to be taking a short break because while they're working on their apps, John Gilroy is working on his abs. We're going to be taking your calls when we come back, 800-433-8850, or you can send email to kojo@wamu.org. He has a life. I'm Kojo Nandi.
This is WAMU 88.5. Good afternoon. I'm Janine Herbst.
With gas, food, and just about everything else costing more these days, there's still one place where the best can be had for free, the library.
We're seeing people rediscover the libraries and finding what great resources they have for users, patrons of all ages.
I'm Michelle Martin. Join us as we talk with our book lady, Lorraine Roy, as she finishes her term as head of the American Library Association. That's next time on Tell Me More.
Today at 2 on WAMU 88.5.
And then coming up at 3 on Fresh Air, Sir Ben Kingsley was inspiring in the title role of Gandhi and terrifying as a twisted thug in the film Sexy Beast. In his new movie, The Whackness, he's a pot-smoking psychiatrist who befriends a teenage drug dealer. It's coming up on Fresh Air at 3 on WAMU 88.5.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from CDWG. With thousands of technology products in stock, they're there to get public sector customers what they need when they need it on purchasing vehicles specific to their organizations. CDWG, the right technology right away. From the University of Maryland, Baltimore County's Department of Information Systems, UMBC offers an online master's program in information systems. Applications for the fall semester are due August 10th. Information at 800-353-UMBC.
Welcome back to the Computer Guys and Gal. Allison Druin is our computer gal. She's also director of the Human Computer Interaction Lab at the University of Maryland College Park. Bill Harlow is a former Mac genius and now a Macintosh consultant with Mid-Atlantic Consulting. And John Gilroy is director of business development at SolutionsDevelopers.com. We go now to Jean in Annapolis, Maryland. Jean, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, everybody. I'm calling you on an iPhone about a problem with a PC.
Very flexible.
My friend has a Dell laptop, and it runs Windows XP Professional, and something's wrong. It's had viruses, it's had spyware, and all those seem to have been cleaned up, but now it runs really, really super slow, and when you just have all the icons on the main Windows screen, they're not and no longer clear. They're showing as blue behind the blue background on them. Is this the registry?
Well, it could be all kinds of things. If you said that you think all the viruses are cleaned off the machine, that's probably not a real good indication. Have you used any of these popular crap cleaners? That's the one to use. There's one called CCleaner and Decrapifier, and I think she should use one of those too and run it and get rid of all kinds of stuff, because usually what happens, these viruses and this malicious code puts bits and pieces all over that hard drive, and you may think it's cleaned up, but you may find 40 or 50 megabytes of just junk in there. So I think you got to clean it out and then call us back in a month.
Okay, and which one do you recommend using?
Oh, there's two or three. There's probably two or three dozen out there. The one we've talked about before is called CCleaner.
Okay.
And that's CCleaner.com. And another one is Decrapifier, to use the vernacular on the radio.
Nice words.
Yeah, nice words.
Nice words, please.
But that's what it is, and it gets all that junk off of there. So one of those two will probably do it. I've seen megabytes and megabytes of junk.
Just junk. Wonderful.
Thank you for your call, Jean. Bill, we got this email from Dorothy who says, I received a disk of pictures and videos that was made on a PC. I have an eMac. I need to know how to see short videos. I see the still pictures, but if I click on the AVI pictures, nothing happens. The still pictures show on the screen, but the small movies, blank, because these are pictures from my 85th birthday party.
Whoa.
I wish to see them.
Oh,
I have
youngster.
QuickTime, Flip 4 Mac, and Perion downloaded, but still nothing. What can I do, or is it not possible to view them?
Wow.
Well, it's most likely possible. And by the way, congratulations on being 85 and on top of things as far as these videos go. There are so many different what are known as codecs that are used to like compress and author video content for the web or what have you. And even if it ends in .avi or .mov, there are actually different flavors of that. And in the case of AVI files, not all flavors are supported natively by the Mac. If you've tried things like Flip for Mac, then the next thing I would recommend is maybe taking a look at DivX, DIVX.com. A lot of AVI files are authored in that, and I've seen some digital cameras that record in that format. So you download that, and it updates your QuickTime, then maybe give the computer a restart, see if you can view them. There's also a really good program called VLC, Media Player, which is a really nifty free program that can play all kinds of formats, and it's good to have in a pinch. You do a Google search for VLC, and you should find it in no time.
800-433-8850 is the number to call if you have a question or comment for the computer guys and gal. 800-433-8850, or you can send email to kojo@wamu.org. This email we got from Lou, who says, where can you get any software development tools that will run under Vista? I'm an old Pascal C-type person. Am I going to have to move to Java or even farther from the machine to play?
I did some research on this, and I talked to a couple developers, and they just started beating their heads in the wall saying, why does someone play around with this old stuff? And I guess if you want to view this as a hobby, maybe like, I don't know, going back and using a Commodore PC or, you know, something earlier than that, I guess it's possible. What you'd have to do is, when I think of this, I think of an NT environment, like an older network operating system. So what he might be able to do is get a virtual environment fired up where he has NT running and maybe start playing with that. Now the issue is going to be with licenses for NT and everything else. Maybe you can find some NT new technology back in 98 or 99, I think. And that's the only thing I can think of. It just seems like a hobbyist type of a quest. So I would say get a virtual machine, maybe fire up NT and try to run it there. But I don't have a better idea than that.
You lost me after you said, I did some research.
First time in my life.
Exactly right. Allison Druin, talk a little bit about what you characterize as the mobile meme mess for Apple.
Oh, it's...
Because Bill has words on this, too.
Oh, yeah. I know. It's just amazing. I mean, essentially, there's this really... It's supposed to be this really great thing, okay? You have multiple Macs, PCs, iPhones, and you can sync them all with, you know, sync your email, your calendars, your address book. Well, the first few weeks, people couldn't even find their email. They were losing email.
I mean, apparently some are permanently lost, too.
Well, here's the thing. They're apparently, I was checking this out today because I've got friends that literally, they both bought, you know, husband and wife team both bought their iPhones, and they're seeing each other's email in each other's inboxes. I mean, it's insane.
Another reason not to get an iPhone.
Never good.
Oh, my gosh. No, it's actually, honestly, you can use Exchange. You can use many different email programs. I would say, boy, they bit off much more than they could chew.
Actually, I don't know if you saw it. There was, I think it was on both Gizmodo and Engadget. Apparently, there was an internal memo from Steve saying, why did we bite off all this stuff? We did too much. We could have delayed Mobile Me and
exactly.
It would have been fine.
Exactly.
And we screwed up. Now,
but they are actually being communicative for the first time in a while. Yes. No. And, you know, there's actual updates, communication updates, where they're actually telling people, OK, we've worked on this. We fixed that. I mean, essentially, they've had server crashes and they think that the emails that people originally thought, this is of July 29th, but originally thought were gone, they think they may be recoverable. But it's just sort of hold on, wait and see. But Apple realizes this is such a mess. They've given one month free for any of the subscribers that have lived through this wreckage already.
Now, I've been lucky, but mine actually worked. I mean, other than the first day where I waited it out, it's been fine, but a lot of people have been affected.
Well, you walk around with stars over your head. You are so lucky.
It's a halo, actually.
It's a halo thing.
Here's,
I don't know.
Here's Ray in Annapolis to grab that halo right now. Ray, you're on the air.
Yeah, we'll test it now.
Ray, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you. I have a piece of malware that got on my computer that it's called Hell's Little Spy, and I tracked it down through SpyBot and tried to eliminate it, but when I brought the computer back up after rebooting it, it just came up in blue screen.
Yep.
And I went back and I restored it with the malware on it, and it like just invites a whole bunch of other crap to come on the computer.
Yep.
So I don't know how to get rid of it permanently.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things that you want to do is you want to throw the kitchen sink at this. What you want to do is run one antivirus program and then run another one. Trend Micro has a free antivirus program you can run remotely. That's what I've done with several of these problems. And then what you want to do is take and again, we've said this many times before, start the computer in safe mode and run your antivirus and your malware detectors in safe mode. And then try a couple of different malware detectors. And then when it comes to the end of the day, then go get one of these, you know, like C cleaners and clean out stuff because it's sitting in there. And I tried that several times. And you get to, after about 10 or 12 hours, you get to the point, well, what point in time do you reformat the hard drive? And I guess it's, for me, it's about 5 hours. After about 5 or 6 hours of throwing everything but your kitchen sink at it,
uh-oh,
and I'm about to call up Bill and cry, and then I just reformat it. So I would try 4 or 5 hours, just every single utility you could find, and you know, the regular ones. You know, there's a product called WebRoot. I think WebRoot is a company, has a product because it's one of the spyware detectors,
yeah,
I've used. It's real strong. So I would try a variety of different detectors, a variety of antivirus, and maybe it's something as nasty as a rootkit. And right now, in Las Vegas, Black Hat is meeting me. We'll come up with the answer for this one. But it's throw everything at it, and then call us in a month.
Have you heard of this one before?
Oh, no. This is got a nice name, though. Never heard of this one, though.
I did try the safe, the safe boot removal, and the problem is if you remove it, then you can't boot the computer.
So, oh boy!
Ooh, I think wow. I might be RIP.
Yeah, you may be reformat time.
Hey, Ray,
right, thank you.
Go ahead, please. Oh, Ray, thank you very much for your call. Ray is done with us at this point, but there, I guess John in Ashton, Maryland, has a problem. It's comparable having to do with a Mac. John, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. I have a daughter starting college at the end of the month, and she called my bluff. She got good enough grades in her last semester in high school that I had to go buy her a Macintosh laptop.
Good.
And her college, like many today, require you to have antiviral software on your computer, won't let it connect to the network. And there's freeware antiviral for Windows. Is there any freeware for Macintosh, or am I stuck going out buying a package for her Macintosh?
You might end up buying one just if you want one that actually has a decent interface. I believe McAfee has one, and Intego makes one, and there are a couple others as well. Norton, I believe, still makes one for Mac. The only free one I can think of off the top of my head is called ClamX AV. You can download it for free. It's a little graphical user interface, so
clunky.
You can scan. It is clunky.
Yeah.
And it's not a real solution. Because it does not run in the background,
right,
and monitor,
right,
things. But that said, I've run it on my Mac. I've never found anything, so it may be good enough to satisfy the requirements. It's up to you. But the Mac antivirus programs probably run about $50 or so
to
get them individually.
It's well worth it. You might as well do it.
Okay, great. Thanks.
John, thank you very much for your call. You two can call us at 800-433-8850. Allison, we talked earlier about the challenge to Google by ex-employees. Now, you say Microsoft is trying to make friends with Facebook?
Yeah, it's actually one of the last social networking, Facebook's one of the last social networking apps that didn't have search built in, okay, because MySpace uses Google, Bebo uses Yahoo, and Microsoft, it needs a piece of the market share. So it made a deal with Facebook. Of course, Microsoft already owns 5% of Facebook, so we won't go there. But anyway, so essentially right now, Microsoft only has 9% share of search, so they're trying to boost up their percentages. I mean, we're talking Google is over 60%, so that's what we're going after. But yeah, that's it.
John Gilroy, you raised the question, computer guys and gal, what the heck is a computer anyway?
Big news from Portugal. How many times do you think you say that in a technology show?
It's great. It's wonderful.
Well, Intel's been out there trying to hawk its wares all over the world, and they're going after less developed countries, LDCs, we're going to call them, and they have a deal with Portugal. Well, Portugal will build this little computer or notebook computer or netbook computer or something, and they'll buy 500,000 of them. They'll be reimbursed through this strange union of countries in Europe. It looks like it's just a direct attack against this
The one laptop per child.
The one laptop per child. And the people from One Laptop Per Child, they are just viciously attacking this thing. I mean, they have nothing but bad things to say about the battery life, and you can't use it outside, and this and then the other thing. So it's just it's an interesting evolution. We go from desktop computers to laptop computers to handheld devices and smartphones, and now we have little small computers called netbooks or something. Anyway, we'll see how this plays out.
It's an interesting thing, though. You should see that, it's 500,000 of these things, and supposedly these kids are going to start school, the school year, with these, okay? And it's called the Magellan Initiative. Essentially, between Intel and One Laptop Per Child, they're each trying to go after ministries of education to say, hey, your kids need laptops. So they're looking at the numbers that we haven't seen in the past. And so because of that, you're looking at the ability to manufacture things much cheaper.
Scale. Mm-hmm.
The scale. But the other interesting thing is that this is a fire sale. This is their second version. And they're actually already working on their third version, which actually integrates some of what OLPC actually has right now, which is the Sugar operating system for the third version. So it's all sort of incestuous, and we'll see where it plays out.
Yeah, we got this email from Jim, who says, can your guests give any opinion on devices that can convert cassette tapes to digital files that can be played on an iPod? I have a huge collection of cassettes that I'm considering converting, but I'm not sure it will be worth it in terms of cost and quality.
I agree with that last statement. Not sure it'll be worth it.
I've got a lot of 8-tracks. To maybe have a solution for 8-tracks as well.
I mean, bottom line is it's an analog playback device, mm-hmm. and, like a turntable, like an 8-track.
I've got them in my car now.
Last century.
And if you have, most Macs have a line in where you can just get the appropriate cable from like Radio Shack or Best Buy or whatever, plug it in, get it recording software, and off you go. If your computer doesn't, there are a lot of USB devices that will take an analog left and right stereo in and send that to the computer over USB. So then you get a program like Audacity, which is free, and download that. It's free for Mac and PC, and it lets you record these tracks. And keep in mind that's real time, so you got to pop in your warbly tape, hope that it's clean, hope that your tape decks align, it's going to sound pretty good. And if it does, you record it in real time, flip it over, record the other side, and then break up each track individually, name them, convert them to MP3. So I guess
hours and hours and hours of fun.
You're like interviewing, your mom for genealogy or something that's really unique. Just replace it, I would say, at this point.
That's what I would advise also. Now we get back to the most cool applications on the new iPhone aspect of the program. Twitterific?
There's a word for you.
Twitterific?
What in the world?
What's Twitterific?
Well, you know what Twitter is, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Twitterific is it was a Mac program at one point, and now there's an iPhone version. So what I did before is I would use Twitter via SMS, so I could text and get replies, and it was kind of clunky. And Twitterific is a nice program that, number one, means I'm not using up my messages, so I don't have to worry about paying for that if I run over. But it's got a really nice interface. I can see the little avatar, the person who twits me. I have a nice interface for a nice interface.
I'm going to twit you.
Yes. Twit. You should feel right at home, John, right?
But call me that all the time. I'm sick of it.
But it's a really clean interface. It's got a nifty way to see links that people send to you right in line in the program, which is really cool, using the same WebKit that Safari on the iPhone uses. And also, it supports location. So you can actually update your location right from the iPhone, take pictures using the built-in camera, and post it right from there. It's sort of like mini blogging.
If you're excited about your new iPhone apps, you should know that we're starting a conversation on conversation.wamu.org so that you can share your excitement with us. In the meantime, we return to Allison Bubbles Druin, who also likes Scribble.
Dr. Allison Bubbles Druin. I like that when the doctor in front of it works.
What's Scribble?
Scribble, a very simple program. You can just draw, all right?
But great for two-year-olds, right?
It's good for two-year-olds. It's good for two-year-olds of the brain, John. But what's so cool, all right, is that you shake it and everything goes away. It's just like an Etch-a-Sketch. So it's
they make Etch-a-Sketch for iPhone, too.
Totally. But
totally, dude.
Totally. Come on.
But you spend too much time with college kids. You really have.
I like that. It keeps me young. Anyway, what's really cool about a lot of these apps is when it takes advantage of some of the sensors in the actual iPhone so that you can shake it. You can feel gravity. You can do things to it physically, and then it comes back. So, let's face it. My favorite, though.
Which is your favorite?
My really favorite is to watch my husband, Ben, play with Phone Saber. Okay? He has this thing.
No, you need to get an iPhone so you can duel with him.
Duel with it. And so, all right, you want to be a geek Jedi? Shoo, shoo, shoo.
Your kids are going to have to really
put you in a timeout chair.
It's so much fun.
I have come to believe Picasso's famous statement that it takes a very long time to learn how to be young.
I want to hear about the accelerometer inside this phone. Well, tell me about this one.
Well, Alice, I'll get to that. I mean, Phone Saber does that. It shows how you can, you know, it senses where the phone is pointed and how fast you swing it to replicate a saber. But the one that I think really shows it off is it's pretty nuts. It's called Dinolicious.
He's got all the good words, you know?
Come on. I go by name.
Yeah. So it's my nickname.
Sounds like a new restaurant.
So I won't go there.
Dinolicious is it's for car geeks, and I confess I'm one of them, and a lot of my friends are too. And it used the accelerometer to actually measure the way your car is traveling. So once you calibrate it, you could actually get surprisingly accurate 0 to 60 times, quarter mile times, quartering forces, and it plots them and saves them on your iPhone, so you actually go back and check it out. It's sort of like a poor man's G-meter. And obviously use it in a safe place. You don't do this on public streets, but you know, if you're serious about, you know, car performance and measurement and seeing if the modifications you're making are working, this is actually a really nifty way to track that.
Will it work with a flux capacitor?
It will up to 88 miles per hour. Then it just gets really haywire.
So
that's,
don't do it as you're
from
speeding
Back to the
here.
Future. And, of course, Don Gilroy still has a go-kart. But we're going to take a short break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments for the computer guys and gal. I'm Kojo Nandi.
This is WAMU 88.5. Good afternoon. I'm Janine Herbst. You're listening to the Kojo Namdi Show.
Coming up at 1, how fallout from scandals at the Justice Department are likely to affect civil servants in the next administration. Plus, renowned broadcaster Marvin Kelb reflects on the life of Alexander Solzhenitsyn and reveals the role that he, Kelb, played in bringing Solzhenitsyn's story to the West. Today at 1 on the Kojo Namdi Show on WAMU 88.5.
With gas, food, and just about everything else costing more these days, there's still one place where the best can be had for free, the library.
We're seeing people rediscover the libraries and finding what great resources they have for users, patrons of all ages.
I'm Michelle Martin. Join us as we talk with our book lady, Lorraine Roy, as she finishes her term as head of the American Library Association. That's next time on Tell Me More.
Today at 2 on WAMU 88.5.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from University of Maryland's Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering, celebrating its 100th anniversary with a centennial weekend of events September 26th and 27th, featuring inventor Dean Kamen. Information at ece.umd.edu.
Over on WAMU's HD Channel 3, Day to Day is on. And on WAMU Bluegrass Country, it's Old Home Place. Complete schedule information is available at WAMU.org.
Welcome back. It's the Computer Guys and Gal. John Gilroy is Director of Business Development at SolutionsDevelopers.com. Bill Harlow is a former Mac genius and now a Macintosh consultant with Mid-Atlantic Consulting. And Allison Druin is Director of the Human-Computer Interaction Lab at the University of Maryland College Park. Back to the telephones. Here's Juno in Fairfax, Virginia. Hi, Juno. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo. Hi, everybody. I've got some flash drives that I think I've totally ruined, but I'm holding on to them because if I haven't, I want to get the data. I thought they had viruses on them, so I deleted a spider, I think, .dat file. Did I totally ruin my flash drive?
Generally speaking, you don't want to arbitrarily delete files. You know, what you want to do is maybe use some kind of utility, because utility is much more effective than blindly guessing. So, but you want to get a machine with the current antivirus. Yeah, get a machine with current antivirus and scan that external device. Yeah.
Yeah, but it won't come on. I mean, have I ruined them? Is there any chance of me getting the data? They won't come on anymore. But I didn't erase any other files.
I wouldn't expect deleting that one file would somehow trash the entire drive.
I know,
drive.
I would be shocked.
It sounds like there's something else at play there.
Yeah. I mean, have you put this, like, you know, near heat or near water? I mean, that's the kind of thing that can usually do something like that quicker. No?
Juno?
Well, Yeah, well, I didn't put any water or any fire.
You didn't put it on your stove?
No stove?
No.
Okay.
I didn't swallow it. My dog didn't eat my homework.
I would try a couple of utilities, like we've mentioned before, you know. And.
But the thing is that the light doesn't come on. I plug them into a machine. How would the utility?
Well, the light's not coming on. It sounds like it could physically just be a dead product. I mean, it may have nothing to do with software on it. I mean, I take it you've tried other ports on that computer that you know work as well.
Yeah, I did, and I've tried different computers. We went to George Mason University Computer Lab and asked them to.
If the light's not coming on, it sounds like the drive just physically failed.
Yeah, just failed. Yeah, that happens.
Okay, sorry about that, Juno, but thank you very much for your call. We got an email from G, who wants to know. G says, "I heard that iPhones will soon be available for use on Verizon. Any truth to this, Bill?"
Doubt it. It would be great. A lot of people like Verizon around here, it seems. But the all but confirmed rumor seems to be that AT&T has got exclusivity until 2010 now. Ooh. I mean, it's a license to print money for them. They're poaching subscribers left and right from other carriers.
And they're giving Apple money every month.
Yeah.
I mean,
but Apple owns a piece of this too. So don't.
And
kid
this
yourself.
Email we got from Dan in Tacoma Park. I just wanted to comment on the iPhone exuberance. I would love to get an iPhone, but only Verizon works in the DC Metro. I do a lot of talking or checking my email while waiting for the train, and therefore the iPhone, which is AT&T, would not work for me. We had General Manager of Metro John Cato on here last week, and he said that, yes, they did have an initial agreement of exclusivity with Verizon, but now they have been ordered to upgrade so that they will be able to give access to other cell phone carriers in the Washington area.
Part of me doesn't like this, though. I mean, that was my moment of silence, you know. Oh, my phone doesn't work on the train. I'll relax for a few minutes. No, that's gone now. Thanks.
That's going to be gone very shortly. John Gilroy, perennial question, what to do with your old computer when you upgrade?
Yeah, this is one of the, you know, over the years, top 10 questions. You know, people always ask, should I turn my computer off at night? And
they should go give it to johngilroy.com.
And yeah, and what should I do with my machine when I buy a new computer or a new a netbook or whatever? And just a couple offerings here for the folks who are listening. E-Tech Recycling, it's called etechrecycling.com, is a place they can pick up equipment. Another place is called Turtle Wings, turtlewings.com.
You know, we'll use that one.
I was at the Turtle Wings site, and they have an office in Oregon, an office in Chantilly, Virginia. Kind of interesting, the two different coasts there. So I just a bit of news for the listeners. If they're upgrading or moving to new machines, call up one of these places. People seem to ask all the time. So, Turtle Wings.
I think Dell and I believe Apple now does too, where if you buy a new machine under certain conditions, they'll actually for free recycle your old machine as
well. Yes.
And other things, so if you're a business, some of these organizations will ensure that it'll be, none of the data will be released. So, dumpster diving.
On to Steve in Winchester, Virginia. Steve, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I have a couple of hundred slides, 35 millimeter slides that I wanted to scan into the computer. I got a Pacific Sun about 3 years ago, but the resolution is only about 1,800 DPI, and it's very slow. And I wanted to know what was available that didn't cost too much. I know there was an Epson for $600, or if there was a gadget you could put onto your regular scanner.
Well, I think you're going to find that if you want something that, you know, does offer some automation, does really high-resolution scans, you are going to pay quite a bit. I mean, Nikon makes some, you know, pro-level and even entry-level pro scanners are pretty expensive. I mean, close to a grand, I believe.
Yeah.
But the quality is really, really good. I mean, I've got a Canon flatbed that does a pretty good job with 35 millimeter, and it can scan more than one at a time, but it's just not going to come close to what you get with a dedicated scanner. So, I mean, if you have a ton and you really want to go through them, save up and get one of the nice Nikon or pro-level scanners.
Get a piece of paper and pencil and figure out what's cheaper to have a service do it or you buy the tool
yourself.
Yeah,
that's,
you know,
true. That's true.
If you have a ton of service, may actually be more expensive, though.
Yeah, you just don't know.
And the I also noticed that trying to scan them, it wouldn't get good pictures with a darker slide.
Yeah.
Is that common?
It depends. If you have one of the pro level scanners, that can extract a lot of dynamic range out of it. So even if, you know, it seems a bit dark, you can go back and tweak it a bit and still get a surprisingly clean image.
I used to have a flatbed scanner that had an attachment on it for 35 millimeter scanning, and of course, it's really kind of like twisting it in Rube Goldberg contraption that kind of works. It really doesn't work well.
No, it does not.
What? Who makes that?
Well, I think this was an Epson scanner from maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
But
I tried it a couple times and I threw the thing away. It's 35.
No, you're better off taking a look at it. Whoever makes cameras tends to make decent scanners specifically for photography.
Right. Nikon comes to mind, and I think Minolta actually made
Minolta
a good one
as
too.
Well. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Steve, thank.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Steve, thank you very much for your call. I think Ramey in Washington, D.C. may have some good news for John Gilroy and maybe even for you, Allison. Ramey, go ahead, please. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to record a lot of my old record albums and my tapes, and I found a CD recorder. I think it was at Best Buy, and unfortunately I'm not home. I think it's a Sony, and you can input both your turntable and your cassette player into this, and it records them as CDs, and it works really well. And then you've got a CD that you can just, you know, put into your computer and upload to your iPod. So I've been able to convert a lot of my old record collection to CDs, and it does work really well. It may not be the same fidelity that you would get now, but it's
Ramey,
good, and it's a lot of old
records. Cool.
Ramey,
great
have
idea.
You converted any 8-track tapes? John
That's
Gilroy wants to know.
No, only reel-to-reel.
even predated that, huh?
Thank you very much for your call and for your advice and your suggestion, Ramey. We got an email from John who says, does the new iPhone support Flash, and if not, when will Apple add this feature?
Definitely does not. When, I have no idea, but I mean, they've said there are a lot of issues with getting true Flash on an iPhone. I think the real Flash plugin is what people want, and just keep in mind that the iPhone is, you know, it's powerful for a phone, but it's not a computer, and Flash on even an older computer can get sluggish sometimes. So I just don't see it, you know, running quickly, and if it does, I see your battery life, you know, plummeting to make the thing, you know, a brick in no time.
Yeah, it needs more memory.
Yeah, I mean, there's Flash Lite for phones, but that I don't see that coming either, because that's not really a replacement for Flash. It's something different. So I would say, unless Adobe finds a way to make Flash suddenly extremely efficient and lightweight, I don't see it happening.
Yeah.
Back to the telephones. Here now, Brian in Gaithersburg. Brian, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Thank you, Kojo. I appreciate your show. So I think my wife and I are probably the only people who have about 100 mini DV tapes of homemade movies of our kids that are inconvenient to watch. And we were wondering if there's a simple, inexpensive way to maybe even do it yourself, get those onto DVD. Thanks so much for taking my question.
There is a simple and expensive way, Brian. Ask your kids. But go ahead, please, computer guys. And
I have no clue.
You said mini DV, right?
Yep.
Well, do you have a Mac or a PC by any chance?
PC.
Well, there's a couple things you can do. One is, I believe there are actually some mini DV, or not mini DV, excuse me, there's some DVD recorders that I think can take an analog input that you could hook up your camcorder to that and just do like a quick one-to-one transfer. I'm sure a lot of the video editing software available for Windows would let you, you know, plug in a mini DV camcorder if it has FireWire, and then you can digitize it that way, and then you can do whatever you want with it, including burn it to DVD.
I mean, yeah. I mean, just a few years ago, that's pretty much what everybody was doing.
Right.
So,
that was the way to get, you know, video content
right.
off
I mean,
the camera.
If you've got 100 of these things, you might consider a service just because it may be more cost-effective and more efficient. But on the other hand, if your kids are old enough, you know, it might be a good project. This could be a good thing.
Summer's getting almost over here. You know,
yeah.
Brian,
school starts.
Brian, thank you very much for your call. Allison Bruin, another self-serving application from the iPhone, Tuner.
Yes, get your local radio stations on your iPhone. Woohoo!
Listen to Computer Guys and Gal on your iPhone. Yes,
yes
I want to hear more. Tell me more. Tell me more.
Well, I mean, you know, the other a lot of these other ones, you know, look at satellite radio and, you know, and do a whole sweep of a lot of different things. But this is specifically for local radio. So go for it, guys. This is a good one.
So you can listen to John make fun of your iPhone on your iPhone.
Yay!
Brilliant.
I can say, no one uses these devices.
Here's Gary in Washington. Gary, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Kojo. I have an old file server that recently crashed us due to power failure. And we have some sensitive, or actually some important financial data on it that we're willing to spend as much as it takes. So I'm wondering if it would be worth it to send it to companies like OnTrack or other companies that normally retrieve files, or or better yet, since SCSI hard drive, is there an external enclosure that can be maybe connected via USB to another PC?
Well, you know, Gary, we started the show with this, and now it looks like we may be ending the show with this. You know, Google has hundreds of hard drives that fail all the time. I mean, this is not unusual in the computer world, and it all depends on how valuable the information. Now, if it's a file server and it's in a business application, it probably has something worthwhile on there. I would be very careful about removing. But there's utilities out there. OnTrack has them, many different types of utilities that can go in and try to recover it. Whether it's SCSI now, SCSI has a great reputation for durability. This hard drive could be 8 years old if it's an old SCSI. I mean,
that's true.
And still running. So the answer is try some utilities. And if not, I would probably call up OnTrack there in McLean and bring your checkbook.
That's true. It's not
yeah,
cheap.
It's not cheap.
Gary, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you very much, Koja.
We got an email from Jim who says, Mac OS gets smaller and Windows gets bloated. Why?
Thank you.
Well, I think to keep this as short as possible, that's a big question. I mean, you've got to support so many different hardware configurations for Windows, right? So, you know, they also want to make sure they don't upset older computer users when they go to the new technology, whereas Apple's not afraid to say, you know what? Obsolete's obsolete. We're moving on. So I think it helps keep
we're
Mac
mean.
OS.
Yeah,
we're
Apple's
we're
mean.
Cruel. We're
obsolete's a four-letter word. That's a four-letter word. So, where's my 8-track tape?
John Gilroy, they're having a hacker convention in Las Vegas this Saturday. Is law enforcement aware of this?
Web 2.0, be careful. Hypervisor, in the business world, the virtual machines are very popular. People are looking at security in that. And rootkit, so 1, 2, 3, Web 2.0, hypervisor vulnerabilities, and rootkit. So we'll see in a week what comes out of Las Vegas besides people with empty pockets. That would be you, by the way, Coco.
The hacker convention started this past Saturday. How long does it go on?
It goes for 2 or 3 days. Then there's something called DEF CON afterwards, which is real nerds. And they really drill down into things. They do a lot of things just to prove that they can do it. You know, it's like, I can bench press 500 pounds. And they do it, and they go, whoa, what do you think of that? And, you know, no one ever needs to do that. So they'll test out vulnerabilities. So it's always interesting news that a few days
John
after
John Gilroy
DEF CON.
Is our computer guy and director of business development at solutionsdevelopers.com. Oh, it was a pleasure.
Thank you, Mr. Namdi.
Allison Druin is our computer gal and director of the Human Computer Interaction Lab at the University of Maryland College Park. Similarly, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
Bill Harlow is our computer guy and a former Mac genius and now a Macintosh consultant with Mid-Atlantic Consulting. A pleasure when you show up on time.
Oh, I'm not even responding to that.
Good singer, good
never
singer.
Forget
I,
that.
Like I was going to say always a pleasure, but apparently the only friend I have is Allison.
Bill's motto is better late than drunk, which I can't believe.
Thank you all for listening. I'm Koja Namdi.
The second hour of the Koja Namdi Show is coming up next on WAMU 88.5. Good afternoon, I'm Janine Herbst.
Coming up tomorrow on the Koja Namdi Show, smart growth ideas may soon become a reality in our region, how the look of our city and suburbs may change as smart growth ideas leave the drawing board and move into the construction phase. Plus, the Pentagon is recruiting anthropologists to help fight the war against terrorism, why some are cheering and others